It's Monday.
It's May 18th, and the word of the day is cunctation, which means the act of deliberately putting something off. Used in a sentence, if you don't have a word of the day on account of your cunctation, it turns out you can just Google obscure synonym for procrastination.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to write something here, but I'm just going to leave it till Heath's back. Not that I immediately think of Heath when I hear cunk.
Oh, see, now my job there is just to yes and Marsh's joke, so if he's waiting for Heath, I have to wait for Marsh to wait for Heath. We've fallen apart early.
Damn it, I'm No Illusions.
I'm Michael Marshall.
I'm Eli Bosnick, and broadcasting delayed from America's Far Center, we are the Skeptocrats. On this week's episode, Marsh will explain British elections just in time for the empire to fall.
Donald Trump gets through his whole China visit without jumping out of a car at a red light and running around it.
And my country will burn through leaders so quickly, I might be prime minister by the time you hear this.
Here's hoping. But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats Eli Bosnick and Michael Marshall. Gentlemen, now that Heath is away, we're free to talk about it. If you could be granted one of Heath's superpowers, which one would you take?
I'm going to go with home decoration.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to go with vacation days because there are members of the French aristocracy from the 17th century who look at his work schedule and think, you've got to turn up some of the time, man. You've got to put some effort.
Oh, the European is saying that to you. Yeah, Heath, woof. And before we get to the point tonight, I want to remind everybody that May is over halfway over, and some of you have forgotten to pledge on Patreon for our Patreon fundraiser. Don't worry, you still have time. We're going to be rounding out Patreon with a patron-only live stream on May 31st, and you can help make the live stream more fun by making or increasing your donation at patreon.com/skeptocrat, or just visit mayTreon.com to learn more. And with that out of the way, in our lead story tonight, now that he's strengthened Russia by hamstringing American aid to Ukraine and strengthened Iran by giving them a reason and opportunity to seize control of the Strait of Hormuz, he's off to China to see if he can't make them great again, too. But don't worry, he's not going alone. He also brought along more than a dozen business leaders and billionaires that would like to directly profit off of the dismantling of American prestige. That group included Tim Apple, David Sachs, Larry BlackRock, Jane Citigroup, Kelly Boeing, and, of course, Elon SpaceX.
Okay, I mean, you joke, but it is genuinely embarrassing that Trump sometimes names people after the most important thing that they own.
Right.
But, I mean, to be fair, that does explain why he calls the Russian leader Vladimir Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, makes sense.
And so now, from a geopolitical perspective, the entire trip was a huge win for China, right? So they've been trying for decades to get a U.S. president to come to China and meet with their president as an equal. And Trump is so fucking stupid that he gave that to him without even knowing that he was giving anything away.
Right. I mean, Trump is so stupid that the only reason he doesn't think the Chinese leader is called President 11 is because Trump can't count that high in Roman numerals.
Yeah. I don't understand. This guy's named after the Super Bowl. This makes no sense.
And if you want to know just how far China went to downplay Trump's visit, I found this tidbit quite telling. I learned about this from Heather Cox Richardson's blog, Letters from an American, which you absolutely should be following, by the way. The main English newspaper in China, which is, of course, state-run, put Trump's visit on page 3. The front page story the day he showed up was about the president of Tajikistan having visited a few days earlier.
Okay, maybe it's like British newspapers and they save page 3 for heartwarming stories about senior citizens and topless ladies. I get it.
I was going to say, that is not what page 3 is famous for here in the UK. Although, if I did have to choose between seeing Trump posing topless or seeing him comprehensively fuck up vital international relations, yeah I'm still going to go with the China trip.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still going with the China trip there.
I get it. So, in a particularly telling insult that Trump was way too dumb to recognize as such, at one point, Chinese President Xi Jinping asked Trump whether he thought the U.S. and China could avoid the Thucydides trap.
Okay, is that the one where you put like your two fingers in and then you can't get them back out again?
Yeah, you got it.
Well, that's exactly what Trump said, yeah. So no, it's a hell of a move since A, there was no way in hell Trump knew what the fuck the Thucydides trap was. It'd be pretty much everybody else in the room did. right? And look, if you don't know, if you're like Marsh and you think it's a fucking finger trap, that's fine. I'd never heard of it either. But apparently, it's a concept attributed to a Harvard political scientist that suggests that when a rising power displaces a declining power, war usually results. So he was directly saying, hey, Trump, your country is declining. And Trump was too fucking stupid to know that that happened.
Yeah. Okay, so it is a bit like the trap that I mentioned. It's just that the two world leaders put their dicks into it instead.
Right, exactly.
Imagine being so much smarter than the guy you're talking to that you can openly threaten World War III and know that there's no way you're going to get into media trouble, Martin.
Right, exactly. Now, apparently, somebody did get around to explaining what that meant to him on his flight home. And I guess he made one of the puppet pals really emphasize the part where Xi was saying that the U.S. is a declining power. And we know that because he sent out this long tweet from Air Force One claiming that when Xi said that we were a declining power, right to Trump's fucking face, and he took it like a wall outlet, he had actually been talking Xi had about Joe Biden because we were a declining power under Biden until Trump got back in office is what he meant. And if you think about it, being a motherfucker could just mean that you're very virile and impregnate all the women you have sex with. That would also be a motherfucker if you think about it.
Okay, and the thing is, that is objectively and obviously not what Xi was saying, because why would he be asking whether they could avoid war now that America has stopped declining? There's no way it would mean that.
It can't possibly make sense. In fact, in the wake of the disastrous state visit, you could tell that even Trump started to realize how little he'd achieved when he was interviewed about it on Fox News. When asked what he'd gotten out of the visit, he told Brett Baer, quote, relationship. It's all about relationship. I have a very good relationship with President Xi and with China. And it sounds like something that doesn't mean anything. Pause. But it's everything in deal-making, end quote. Which is, by the way, somewhat undercut by the fact that the only achievement he could point to was an intangible thing that, according to him, he already had when he arrived. So great deal-making, dude.
Right, yeah, but like, that's not all he achieved, because he also managed to give some of his buddies a lift while they went to visit some of the slavery factories that they owned.
That's true, yes.
They got to fly in the private jet carpool lane and everything. Like, when you think about it, this was Trump being an environmentalist.
Exactly. Really?
And did he get a shout out from Greta Thunberg? No. Yeah. Hypocrite. Hey, look, trust me. As someone whose name is on the Lolita Express, a lot of times these are not the worst dudes Trump shared a bag of peanuts with. We are. We're very proud of his progress, Martian. We'd like you to join us.
I want to just make it clear that Eli wasn't saying that he was a person whose name is on the Lolita Express a lot. The phrasing of it. He was talking about Marsh.
He's not saying he wasn't, but still.
Yes, exactly. Now that I'm not invited to QED anymore, I can be clear. I was good friends with Jeffrey.
You're talking to a guy in the Epstein files anyway. It doesn't matter.
That's because we were Jewish. You guys wouldn't get it.
No, of course. Trump claimed to have accomplished a lot more than just the relationship thing because he realized even mid saying it how pathetic that fucking sounds. So he said he made a lot of trade deals. Yeah. But that's complicated by the fact that no, the fuck he didn't. Any trade deals would famously leave, you know, paper trails. One might even say that they are paper trails.
Pretty important.
He didn't have any of those to offer, as it turned out.
Okay, but in his defense, do we know for certain that he meant trade deals for America? Or is it just that Tim Apple came away with some rare earth minerals and a brand new manufacturing plant, and then Trump has taken that as like an aggregate win for the posse?
Exactly. He wingmanned some trade deals.
Yes, exactly. Why would we be drinking so much champagne on the way home if we hadn't accomplished anything? Yeah.
Exactly. And look, if we've learned anything, it's that when tech bros make themselves fabulously wealthy, the first thing they do is turn around and help America with that money, absolutely. Right?
Yeah. So after claiming that China agreed to buy U.S. soybeans and Boeing aircraft, he amended, quote, this is an actual quote, I think it was a commitment. I mean, you know, it was sort of like a statement, but I think it was a commitment. It's a great thing. It's a lot of jobs, end quote. So China, you'll be surprised to learn, has not confirmed that they've agreed to buy any goddamn thing from anyone. Now,
single on Facebook. That's crazy. I said we were in a relationship. They have to accept they probably don't have the app.
Now, in the interest of journalistic integrity, that some fucking ad funds chart would have you believe we don't have any of over here on the Skeptocrat.
Fuck yeah, come on.
I need to bring it. I need to admit that Trump did come away from the meetings with a few things.
Yes, in that he stuffed his pockets with as many fortune cookies as he could carry.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's got to be worth something. It's got fortune right in the name, so it's got to be worth something.
497 more of these, and I am on a list, guys. I don't know about this.
And the thing is, like, we know that this is an administration that's made a lot of money out of guessing what happens in the future. Just look at the spikes on Poliwag before you invade the country.
Absolutely. So, no, but he did get some stuff. Like, for example, China agreed to extend the existing tariff pause that only exists because Trump's too stupid to get all the way through to, but what if they do the same thing that we're doing in the thought process? Xi also apparently asked him directly if the U.S. would defend Taiwan in case of Chinese invasion, and he didn't say yes. According to his own retelling, he responded, quote, "I don't talk about that." End quote. Like, he's keeping our fucking Taiwan policy behind a lace fan or some goddamn thing.
I'm just saying, G, picking on smaller countries in the name of bygone imperialism's kind of our thing right now. Get your own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
No, in fairness, like, you do have to be really careful when you talk about Taiwan, though. Like, the people there, they're so, they get so competitive and uptight about it. They've got a real Taipei personality.
I hope the genocide doesn't start this week, because it'll put a real damper.
Yeah, no. Hey, that joke is so much better in the subtitles, guys. So much better in the subtitles. It's okay. But the most important thing Trump learned while he was in China is that they have an awesome ballroom, and he doesn't. In a social media post on his way home, he tweeted out, quote, "China has a ballroom, and so should the USA," end quote. In case you were wondering where his mind was during this historically important visit. And speaking of having your mind on fashion, it's time for a word from this week's first sponsor, Quince.
Okay, but how can it be a 10 out of 10 if you don't blow up any aliens?
Because it's capturing a moment of youth, Marsh.
Right, a moment of youth with zero aliens.
Hey, guys, what's crack-a-lackin'?
Wow, Eli, that is quite an outfit.
You like it? I'm told this is very European.
I mean, it's something.
Yeah, so I realize the reason why everyone keeps, like, going on vacation and starting podcasts without me is because I don't have the right look, you know? Mm. So, Thong City, you know, that Thong City, Europe, obviously.
Well,
so.
Right. So, Eli, if you want to up your look without breaking the bank, you should just try Quince.
What's Quince?
Quince has all the wardrobe staples for spring. Think 100% European linen shorts and shirts from $34. Lightweight, breathable, and comfortable, but still look put together. And clean 100% Pima cotton tees with a softness that has to be felt.
Well, that sounds great.
It is. Plus, everything is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'll find on similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're getting premium materials without the markup.
But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I tried out a set of their linen shorts at the start of the spring, and they've become my everyday wear. That's why I, No Illusions, personally endorse Quince.
All right, Noah. I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptocrat.
All right, guys. Thanks. So, you think I should change out of this thong?
For the funeral? Yeah, probably, man.
Okay, well, they didn't say a dress code on the invitation.
Sure.
It's black.
Thank you.
And we're back. And next up in headlines in shit-heaping your own council news, it's May, which, if you're in the UK, means just one thing.
More rain.
You're chasing your cheese downhill again.
Nope. Okay, I mean, yes to both those things, but it also means local elections. So it's the time of the year where people from various parts of the country get together to say, wait, that was today? Whoops. All right, yeah, I'm sure it'll work out fine. And so for context, the local elections here, they always have abysmally low turnout. And this year was no different, with 68% of eligible voters making the decision to not be a voter this time. Huh. So turnout was 31.5%.
Yeah, to give you an idea, that's about the same number of Britons who actually believe breaking a mirror will bring them bad luck.
Yeah, well, whenever anyone tells you voting doesn't matter, just remind them that we've yet to have an election where anywhere close to all of us have tried it. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Yeah. Who knows if voting matters?
Now, the thing is, not everyone around the country had an opportunity to decide not to bother voting this time. There was only 5,000 seats across 135 councils in the UK that were put to vote here. And going into the election, half of those were held by Labour. The Tories held nearly 1,400 seats. And of the rest, the Lib Dems had 700. The Greens had about 100. There were 150 that were independents. And there were just two that were Reform UK.
For those of you watching who don't remember the British political system, Labour is the Democrats. Tories are the Republicans. Lib Dems are Democratic Socialists, but not as nice. And Reform are the Tea Party, but with actual tea.
Okay. All right. And no law counts until somebody catches the golden snitch. I get it.
That is true. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, unsurprisingly, Labour were the big losers here. For one, the incumbent government always loses a ton of seats in the local elections because voters see it as their chance to blame the government for how things are going by essentially self-harming themselves at a local election, mm-hmm. and then the bins get taken out less frequently.
We're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. However, the scale of the loss is really significant this time. Labour lost 1,500 of their like 2,500 seats, and they lost control of 38 of the councils. Meanwhile, the Tories lost 560 seats, bringing their total number of councils that they control down to just 9. Everyone else gained. Reform gained 1,452 seats and now control an extra 14 councils. The Greens gained 441 seats and therefore 5 councils. And the Lib Dems took 155 seats, giving them 1 extra council. And if those numbers in that makeup make absolutely no sense, welcome to local politics in the UK.
Yeah, at this point, if you're giving seats to Nigel Farage anywhere but an old age home, your priorities are out of whack.
Yeah, ejector seats, maybe, if you have them.
I stand corrected.
The thing is, you joke about that, Noah, but he's already survived a plane crash, so I don't think an ejector seat's going to touch him.
Woof.
Yeah, so the headline message is that Labour lost incredibly big and Reform won big too. And they now hold the majority of the council seats that were up for the ballot. That might look like there's been a straight shift of voters from Labour to Reform, but it's actually a bit more complicated than that. In reality, there's been a huge shift of votes from the Tories to Reform, which, you know, is already completely ludicrous given how many people in Reform are just former Tories who got voted out. Like half of the people who run for Reform are that. And I'm not usually one to accuse voters of being unintelligent, but in this case, some of the voters were genuinely confused by the same guy just changing which shade of blue his tie happened to be.
Yeah, well, I admit it is very confusing because our bad guys wear red, not blue.
Yeah,
so it's very, it's which ones are they?
Yeah. Well, and by the way, when Marsh said he wasn't one to accuse voters of being unintelligent, he was talking about British voters, guys, accusing American voters of being unintelligent. That's our mission statement here at Skeptocrat Incorporated. So he's on board with that.
Yeah, I have no issue at all with calling Americans unintelligent. I will absolutely admit to that.
That's true. He texts me every morning.
Now, even more delusional than those Reform voters was the Tory leader Kemi Badenoch, who ended the election with a victory lap on how badly it had gone for Labour, even though under her, the Tories are now fourth in terms of how many council seats they got in this election.
Wow. Yes, I fell and shat myself during the relay race, but that other guy slipped in it a little bit, and that really hurt his time, so...
Yep. And then there was a big move of previous Labour voters going over to the Green Party, who were the other really big winners here. But because Labour's vote was going to a party with a genuine left-wing aspiration and the Tories completely collapsed, our excellent voting system meant that Reform could just walk right into a lot of these seats. And that's not to say that there weren't voters who did switch from Labour to Reform. There definitely were. But Everybody in this election now has focused on how Labour were outflanked by Reform. And that means some have argued that it's proof that Labour needed to be even harsher on immigration in order to out-reform Reform. And that's a tactic that very clearly has worked so well for the Tories, who again are now right. Fourth.
Yes, if we all act more conservative, everyone will be more reasonable. Hey, yeah. That's worked out awesome in the States, guys. Definitely give it a shot.
Yeah, right. But the advantage that Reform has and that Trumpism is based on is that all the other parties are bogged down with all this standing for something shit and representing ideals, however imperfectly, way more streamlined if you're just whatever your fucking donors tell you to be in any moment.
Yeah,
exactly. So the fact is, our first-past-the-post voting system is just not remotely fit for purpose anymore. The majority of voters voted for a left, or at least a notionally centre-left party, and the big winners were the far right. Yeah. And it wasn't helped by a media campaign determined to smear Green Party leader Zach Polanski, who has been vocally supportive of Palestine. There was even newspaper articles accusing him of anti-Semitism, despite the fact that he personally is Jewish. Huh. Also, those newspaper articles were accompanied by cartoons like this for the people watching on YouTube, which is not great.
Oof. I mean, he looks limber. You know, and if you don't get that joke, it's your own fault. We're on video now. You can
exactly.
Yeah.
Smash that like button. Don't forget to ring the bell or I'll kill myself. Now, what you're supposed to say.
There were even voters who said that they couldn't bring themselves to vote for the Green Party because of all the anti-Semitism, which is why they voted Reform. And Reform are a party whose new elected councillors have openly questioned whether the Holocaust was real. That would be a guy called Jay Cooper in Bootle West, which is actually just on the outskirts of Liverpool, where I live. He responded to a Facebook comment about Hitler by writing, quote, "I don't agree with him murdering innocent people."
No buts. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, but the Holocaust, sick, is a hoax. There wasn't even 6 million Jews in Europe at the time. Propaganda.
Okay, to be fair, propaganda in Liverpool might just mean he wants to have a look at the evidence himself.
Yeah, he wants to have a propaganda. Yeah.
Propaganda. Nice.
Now, he is not the only troubling new addition to Reform's ranks. There is the one who used to be in the far-right British National Party. I say one, I mean three. There are three ex-BNP candidates who got elected this time. There is the one who celebrated the rape of Punjabi and Sikh women. There's the one who called who called white people the master race on social media. There's the one who said the local Nigerian community should be melted down and used to fill in the potholes in the roads. And there was the guy who was prosecuted for assault after he beat up the mother of his child. And they are now all elected on a Reform ticket.
Okay, admittedly, that sounds bad, but at least your right-wingers aren't running on beating their wives. If he was a Republican, his mugshot would have been the campaign poster.
Yeah, no, it turns out that three of those guys also accidentally won the Republican primary from my congressional district. Yeah.
I mean, you joke, one of the Reform guys did win two separate seats because he didn't realize he was actually standing in both of them. And he got elected in both and had to stand down in one. So they are A-game politicians.
Yeah, right.
Got a man spread on the bench.
Meanwhile, we've heard a lot about how Zach Polanski didn't pay the right amount of council tax on the narrow board that he was living on in London, something that he claims was a misunderstanding because residents in that marina believe that council tax was actually included as part of their dock fees. And that means he might have not paid as much as £1,300 a year for the last 3 years. That is an unforgivable amount. I'm sure you'll both agree. In other news, we discovered that Nigel Farage was recently given £5 million by a crypto billionaire, Christopher Harbin, in the months before he got elected as MP, and that is a figure that he failed to disclose to the Parliamentary Standards Committee.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but that yacht's paperwork, fucking flawless. Filed to the day of sale, my friends. Yeah. That's what matters.
Now, according to Nigel, that £5 million figure was a personal gift from a friend. Just happens to be the main funder of Farage's political party and the biggest single donor to a political party in British history.
Wow. So it was a personal gift. So like they're tricked her out at lunch. You know, he's forgotten his wallet. He turns to his buddy, Chris. But, well, you know, Chris doesn't have anything smaller than a 5 million pound note, right? So yeah. He's like, I'll get you back, you know, at the office.
Yeah, he's a crypto guy. It's just his coin must have surged at the wrong time.
Right,
and
no.
this one coin is suddenly 5 million. Right. There's nothing I could do about it.
Oh, well, you know.
Now, the thing is, this wasn't a political donation. It was just a gift to fund the cost of Nigel's personal security team, which he says is now a lifelong necessity given how often he's attacked in the press. And then when pushed on why he didn't declare that, he said the rules say you only need to declare a donation like that or a gift like that if there is any doubt that it might be political in nature. And in his mind, there's no doubt.
Oh,
which is weird, because when he was asked about it again recently, he explained that that money was actually a thank you gift for delivering Brexit, which sounds pretty political, given that it was from a non-dom billionaire who benefited from Brexit and who funds Farage's fucking party. And it's not the only question mark over his finances, given that we also still have no idea who bought him a house in Clacton, where he represents as local MP. That is a question he's just flat out refused to answer.
Okay, but if he answered it, then there wouldn't be any doubt. He's trying to do the right thing, Marsh. He's trying to instill...
Yeah, I don't think the law meant your doubt, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
That way.
Now, Farage is being investigated by the Parliamentary Standards Authority over this, and if found in breach of the rules, he could face suspension or even expulsion from Parliament. Except he won't, because consequences don't exist for the far right. Consequences do exist for those who elect the far right, though, because Kent Council, who voted in a reform council in the 2025 local elections, now find themselves £700 million in debt and having to raise taxes. While Durham Council, which went to reform at the same time, similarly find itself in chaos and debt. Still, none of that will stop Nigel Farage sweeping into power at the next general election, I'm sure, especially if his billionaire backers and good friends continue to have any say in the matter.
Yeah. And in Mom Done It Again news, they said he couldn't win the primary, and he did. They said he could never be mayor, and he is. Whenever the people tell Zoran Mamdani he can't do something, he motherfucking does it. Which is why, this week, Mayor Mamdani announced that, in spite of inheriting a budget deficit larger than the entirety of the Great Depression, New York City has balanced the motherfucking budget, y'all!
Okay. So I've heard a lot about Mamdani. Let me guess. He's been collectivizing every dollar slice joint, and he's turned every bodega into a Sharia shisha bar. Mm-hmm. Is Times Square now full of hookers?
Yeah. Now, I want to say at the outset here that if you regularly listen to our show, you know that I've taken a lot of opportunities to applaud the Mamdani Caliphate. Partially, that's because he does a great job and I can see it with my eyes. But partially because if we're ever going to find ourselves out of this political hellscape and start electing better people, we have to dispel the notion that socialist far-left politicians talk a big game but can't actually do the job. Far-leftists like Mamdani are, and this is important, better at so-called real politics than the stooges who accept the evils of society as just how things are, right? If we want a better world, your Uncle Frank needs to understand that Zoran Mamdani doesn't just talk pretty, he's going to make his gas cheaper and his life better as well.
Okay, but if your life is getting made better by a Muslim socialist, is that even living at all, really?
That's fair.
Well, hey, if Uncle Frank is looking for an alternative to living at all, I have ideas. I got some ideas, Frank.
So let's talk about how he did it. And look, Heath's not here, and he doesn't like it when I take unfair shots at mainstream media outlets, because he is correct in asserting that support for legacy journalism is important in a world where such a fractured version of truth is apparent. But I think even he would agree that the reporting on this budget balance has been atrocious. Uh-huh. I went through half a dozen whataboutery-filled articles to get to the actual truth of what happened, and almost all of them seemed more interested in downplaying this achievement than reporting on the story.
Yeah, no, I love the community note following these stories around social media that's like, well, yes, but he didn't solve all budget problems forever.
Yeah,
though.
Can you really solve a budget if you don't have any Jews on your team? We're just saying. So first and foremost, among those objections is that Mamdani somehow cheated by negotiating aid from New York State. Governor Kathy Hochul committed $1.5 billion in state aid for a host of municipal services, and the state budget, which has yet to be finalized, will funnel another $4 billion to the city over the next 2 years. But here's the thing. Cities are a part of the state that they are inside of. Mm-hmm. And in New York City's case, it's about 43% of the population.
Huge part of the state, yeah.
Such
a big part of the state that when you say you're from New York, but you're not from New York City, you have to specify.
You have to clarify, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if you know this, but other cities in the state, including my hometown, have been benefiting from that relationship for literally ever. They're not in it for the Crowley's Dairy, if you know what I mean. So the idea that New York is clawing back a fraction of the money they bring into the state actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the people griping about this think that the only way to balance a budget is to cut all of the things that you're spending on, rather than just finding ways to increase the other side of the scales. Like, conservatives would prefer that there just be no kids on the seesaw at all, because that way it's easier to keep it perfectly level.
Yeah.
And then it's easier to, like, bulldoze the playground to make way for some condors as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. No, Republicans are literally complaining that Mamdani taxed and spent his way to a balanced budget. Right, and New York City voters are like, well, yeah, no, that's what we elected him to do, man. He would tax, and then he would use the taxes to then spend.
Whoa, what's with all these pluses and minuses in this checkbook? I don't know. You might also have heard that the largest share of the savings, about $2.3 billion over 2 years, is expected to come from the city delaying certain pension payments. And that might have you picturing some little old lady not getting her pension check. And look, if that was the case, that would be awesome, right? None of those little old ladies voted for Mamdani because they read on Facebook that he was going to make it mandatory to put all the chicken over rice. But no, the city has been making up a deficit in pension payments since 2012, and this savings in the budget is created by pushing back that payoff plan another 5 years. So your grandma can still send you your state-supported memes about Jesus on Instagram. Don't worry.
Yeah. And there was one particular former New York mayor who almost helped lower that pension bill this month as well.
Yeah.
And I do wonder what a dead Rudy Giuliani would have done for the New York economy. It's got to be good.
Right? The parade would bring in a lot of money. Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, I hate that he's still alive, but I love that he's dying slow. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
What about taxing the rich? We were told the second Mamdani was elected, the rich would flee the city en masse to avoid taxation. Well, it turns out they didn't do that because New York is where all the nice things are.
It's great,
they
want
to live there. Mamdani's pied-à-terre tax is expected to bring another $500 million from the new tax surcharge on second homes worth more than $5 million. Give me 1 second. I just checked. Yep, everyone who has a second home worth more than $5 million in New York City can afford that. They got it.
Well, I mean, you say that, but that's their second home. You don't know how much their first home costs. Like, maybe Oscar the Grouch has that garbage can listed as his primary address for tax purposes.
Oh, there you go, yeah. So meanwhile, the rednecks in my hometown are in this weird position where they either have to support, like, a Muslim socialist or Manhattan elites. It's causing a run on the wild turkey around here.
It's tough. Marsh, I left this out of the story, but there was actually a New York Post takedown based on that actual argument, which is like, well, my first apartment I owned wasn't very nice, so I'm not that rich.
It doesn't count, yeah.
1 second, let me get my violin out, my friend. Oh, there it is. And I'd like to point out that he's done all of this without raising property taxes. Now, those of you who tuned in earlier this year, we talked about how Mamdani explained that if he wasn't allowed to tax the rich or find other savings, he would have to do that. Well, he did find that money, and so now he doesn't. And again, every article I read made this seem like a threat that he backed down on like a coward. But if I explain to my 5-year-old that if he throws his Legos, he doesn't get to play with them, and then he doesn't throw his Legos, I'm not backing down. I'm explaining the notion of cause and effect.
Yeah, exactly. Just like if you don't use your headlines to air personal gripes, Heath doesn't have to come back from vacation early to yell at you.
Thank you, Marsh.
Speaking of which.
Correct. One more thing. I, of course, can't talk about Mom Donnie without acknowledging his great and terrible mistake that is congestion pricing.
Okay.
Now, the last time I brought this up, certain spurious, large-eyebrowed cast members challenged my extremely scientific objection to the practice. But did you know that congestion pricing kills? That's right. In the first year of congestion pricing, 73 human beings, mothers, fathers, children, died. Wow. Tragedy.
Eli, it appears that the source for that statistic comes from an article titled Congestion Pricing Cut NYC Deaths 40%.
The article says congestion pricing, quote, caused childhood traffic deaths, so...
To plummet were the next
The end of that quote is neither here nor there. I want my $12 back. I am owed several $12 from Zoron specifically. And speaking of the savings, I think we're all owed. Let's take a quick break for this week's other sponsor, Mint Mobile.
Give it back,
Earthman!
No, what's that?
Oh, hey, Marsh, this is a contract goblin from Big Wireless. He's always stealing my money.
You said you told that.
You said I had unlimited data.
I never said you had unlimited data.
You did say that.
Look, Noah, if you want to save money on your wireless bill, you should switch to Mint Mobile.
What's Mint Mobile?
Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text to live on the nation's largest 5G network. Bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle.
But have you actually tried it?
I have. Mint Mobile gave us the same great service as Big Wireless, but for a fraction of the price. That's why I personally endorse it.
But you work for Big Wireless Gremlin.
It's just a job, man.
If you like your money, Mint Mobile's for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. That's mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, 5 GB plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for the first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
All right, Marsh. You hear that, Big Wireless Goblin? Get out of here.
Whatever, my kid has a baseball game anyways.
Man, each of us really is an unexplored ocean, huh?
You said it, Marsh. You said it. And we're back. Next up in headlines in Clandroid news. Heath's on vacation, but that doesn't mean his puns are. There are a lot of things that are really painful about losing to idiots on a national scale, most notably the constant humiliation that comes with the awareness that you're losing to idiots on a national scale. But sometimes the most direct victims of their idiocy are themselves, and that provides a slight glint of silver around the dark cloud of now. So in that vein, I want to talk about all the idiots that carved their own faces off and handed them to the leopards in the form of the ephemeral promise of a golden Trump phone.
Trump phone!
Okay, I've heard it explained before that the spelling and the grammar issues that you see in like a Nigerian prince email spam are actually there deliberately to help you filter out the marks that are too smart to fall for the con. And
yeah,
every single con artist in Abuja has a lot to learn from Trump Inc. Like, it genuinely might be the only course they could teach at Trump University.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so this saga begins on June 16th of last year when Trump's idiot twins Don Jr. and Eric announced that they were launching a new gold-plated smartphone called the T1 for Trump and just the number one that would be, quote, designed and built in the United States, end quote, and that would allow Americans to text safely, quote, without the potential of a backdoor into the hardware that some of our adversaries have installed in there, end quote.
Right, because that back door would have been installed by entirely homegrown adversaries of America.
Yes, right.
Cash Patel just hands you an iPhone duct taped to a voice recorder. Here,
right.
Use this. I mean, don't.
So, of course, now this could be yours for the low, low price of $499. But, of course, if you want to get in on the ground floor, and you do, you could secure your purchase with a $100 deposit before the phone was even designed.
Why, that's below the ground floor. Lucky me.
It's a subterranean investment. Yeah. So... motivated by the fear that the Chineses were coming for their fortune in online poker chips and Candy Crush gold bars, Trump supporters lined up by the hundreds of thousands to plop down a $100 deposit on the concept of a plan for a phone. An estimated 600,000 in all paid a collective $60 million for the privilege of a phone that, within weeks of the announcement, had changed its website copy from a promise of being all caps made in the USA and, quote, disengaged cap locks to being, quote, designed with American values in mind, end quote.
Okay, but in fairness, we've changed the terms of the agreement now that we've got your money. Is an American value at this
point. Very much. Yes, yeah. And any historian will tell you, nothing is more American than the slavery used to make these phones.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Yep. God, us and Darth Vader at this point, right? Just simpatico. All right. So anyway, so fast forward 10 months. And these customers still haven't heard a goddamn thing about their Trump phones, and they're starting to get a little restless. And while they're silently grumbling about how they're going to be damned if they'll ever admit to their purple-haired niece that they got ripped off on their fucking Trump phone, the company quietly snuck back into the website copy and changed the $100 deposit from a deposit to, quote, a conditional opportunity if Trump Mobile later elects in its sole discretion to offer a device for sale, adding that, quote, a deposit is not a purchase and does not constitute acceptance of an order, does not create a contract for sale, and does not guarantee that a device will be produced or made available to purchase, end quote.
Yeah, think of that $100 as less of a down payment and more of a really expensive wishing well.
There you go, yeah.
And the amazing thing is, nobody who made this stupid down payment knows that you're not allowed to be like, just because you bought a sandwich doesn't mean I owe you a sandwich.
Right. Right. Yeah. So the assumption across the internet when all this came to light was that Trump Mobile intended to pocket the $60 million and continue to update their shipping estimates until the customers all died, apparently. They'd already announced the phone was going to launch in August or September, and then they delayed that to October, which was delayed to November or December. And then they blamed the Democrats and said they couldn't ship the phones because the government shutdown happened, and you know, and then they delayed it to March. So at the same time, though, the FCC had signed off on a new phone for Trump Mobile, and the company said that they were just waiting for T-Mobile to approve the use of their network, which, in case anybody's still keeping score, is yet another crazy conflict of interest, since any communication company is dependent on all kind of government approvals for every fucking thing.
We're just working out how to get Jimmy Kimmel off all the phones, and then we're ready to launch, people.
Right, yeah, exactly. Ready. But as the cries of scam reached a fever pitch online, Trump Mobile announced that the T1 had started shipping that very week. What are the odds? And as near as I can tell, all we have to go on is the fact that Trump Mobile said the phone shipped. And when they were pressed for details, they even backed off of that, saying that they would be willing to, that they'd be able to start fulfilling their not technically pre-orders, quote, within the next several weeks, end quote. Not even couple weeks, but several weeks.
Yeah, that's like if you started a horse race with, and they're off. Well, they say they're off. We expect them to be off eventually.
Yeah, but okay, but here's the thing, though. Even if and when these idiots actually get their phone, they won't be getting a phone made in the USA or even a phone designed with American values in mind, whatever the fuck that means. And yes, even without knowing what the fuck it's supposed to mean, I can still dismiss the claim, because what they're going to be getting is a Wingtech-manufactured T-Mobile Revel 7 Pro 5G with a gold cover slapped onto it, which is a Chinese-designed and made phone that was originally released a year before Trump Mobile made their first announcement.
Yeah. I'm sorry. When we called it a T1, we meant to use its full name, Made in T1.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Now, you might be asking yourself, hold on, a Revel 7 Pro, is that not a phone that you can buy at Walmart right now for $127? Why, yes. Yes, the absolute fuck it is. Hmm. So unless they've slapped $372 worth of gold onto this motherfucker.
Which they might have.
Which they might have. Yes, we have to admit, in the interest of journalistic integrity. But even, unless that, it's still a fucking scam. So they are so fucking incompetent that they've accidentally turned their scam into the wrong scam. So yeah, it looks like we're a few months away from having the telltale low-income version of the Cybertruck in the form of gold phones slapped to the pulsing, bloody facial muscles and bones where these idiots' faces used to be. And in modern-day America, the suffering of idiots who had it coming is the closest we get to good news anymore, so soak it the fuck in.
And finally tonight, in your Vision news... One of the best things about having Marsh on the show, besides his rugged good looks, is that his presence reminds us that America is not, in fact, the center of the universe. While we actively campaign to be the worst of the world powers, we are by no means the only one, which is why it would be easy for our listeners to miss an event taking the world by storm as we speak. I'm talking, of course, about the Eurovision Song Contest.
Okay, so... I readily agree that Marsh has good looks, but they're not rugged. No offense, Marsh, but you're rugged. As rugged as a fucking doily.
I've literally not shaved for an entire week. This is me unshaven yes. for a week.
Yes. Also, genuinely on this podcast, he's the second most rugged.
Yeah.
He's the second most rugged. Silver medal for ruggedness. Right. So for those of you unfamiliar, Eurovision is like if every country... picked a single karaoke song from their country and then lit it on fire, and then they fired it out of a cannon made of glitter at a random stadium in Europe for what can only be described as a combination of World War II and American Idol.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And just like in World War II, everyone is slightly surprised to see Australia there, but just assume the British have got something to do with it.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Also, just like in World War II, some people had to get kicked out to let Israel in.
It's true. Oh, it's true. Wow. Sacrifices had to be made. And look, the contestants are as diverse as the countries they represent. The favorites to win this year were a Finnish violinist reclaiming her glory after fashion rapist Peter Nygaard ruined her life for pointing out that he was a fashion rapist. An Australian soap opera star is running. And there's a Greek guy who dresses like a cat and sings about sashimi.
Okay. Well, I don't get a vote, but I'm really invested in Sushi Cat Guy now.
Obviously. Yeah. Look, as of when you're hearing this, the winner of Eurovision has already been announced, but I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Yeah, arguably the winner is Israel for even being allowed to compete this year.
Yeah.
Or it's Ireland, Spain, and the Netherlands for boycotting the entire competition for that very reason.
Hear, hear.
Yes, the entire contest is on YouTube, and I highly recommend you take a week and watch it from the beginning. We could all use a little excitement right now, and if Eurovision doesn't get you there... I don't know what to tell you.
And on that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to Eli Bosick, thanks to Michael Marshall, and thanks to all the listeners who liked us, followed us on various social internets and stuff. And please keep doing that, and please keep listening, and please keep telling your friends. If you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat, just like all the marvelous Patreon patrons that Heath will thank by name on the next episode, and or when he gets around to it. You can never tell with Heath. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and The Citation Needed Podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Drafts on Mars. He is the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out by using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Drafts on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off.
Bob Fosse.
All right. Morgan, sorry. Everybody jumped on their own accord. I lost control early. It's a 9 a.m. record. What are you going to do? Right. But we're still going to count. Here we go.
Fuck.
You all right?
Yeah, I just leaned and fucking threw out my knee.
Oh, you leaned.
I'm fine. I lean
too old for that shit, man. Woof.
What are you talking about? I'm a YouTuber. I'm young and fucking hip.
All right, here we go.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.